I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now, here's Clinton and Leslie.
Good morning, Sunday morning!
Do you want to run it old school? I'll run it old school.
Yeah.
I gotta run it old school. Hey, whether you're an art maker, an art faker, an art breaker, or an art partaker,
yes.
Art breaker got the best of. Welcome all, because all are welcome, of course, to Homegrown, your show about local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with Leslie. She is a woman, and every Sunday we hear her roar, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Thank you, Clinton.
So how was your week?
It's been a crappy week, actually.
Right?
It's been a horrible, horrible week. Oh my gosh. Capped off by the fact that David's day job, the day job of David, has snatched him away from us once again.
Once again. You know what? I think next time this happens, we should just move the show there.
I think so.
Yeah, we'll just walk through the aisles.
Just set it up
with the mics.
Following David around
the store. And what are you doing now,
as
David?
He's helping customers, like he's doing interviews. I think that would work. Maybe we could get a sponsorship for that. I would do that for a sponsorship.
And we could probably, you know, we would probably end up like correcting him. No, David, that is not the correct cheese to pair with that wine. I'm sorry. No. He's telling you the wrong thing. Back up. because I love to pick on David.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like a little brother. You got to poke him. You have to keep them in line, you know?
For our radio audience, Leslie is now talking to our guest. Because everyone out there is like, he knows this. Why is she telling Clinton that she loves to pick on David? This is not new information.
It might be new information if they haven't heard the show before.
There you go.
All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
We're ready.
Well, wait, I want to know why your week is so horrible.
Well, it was one of those weeks where, because of my schedule,
you didn't get a chance to see Spider-Man Homecoming.
I did not. And I also didn't get much opportunity for sleep. So I was literally walking around all day Wednesday thinking it was Friday. And was very disappointed
when that bubble was burst.
Yes,
as I imagine it was continually throughout the day.
Yes, it was not fun. Like, I was on the phone with my mom yesterday. I'm like, it's Saturday, right? She's like, yes. I'm like, okay, I'm just making sure. It's been, you know, one of those weeks. I'm gonna just check in.
an abrupt re-insistence of reality. Kind of like when Peter Parker is swinging along and suddenly his web line is snapped.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to see Spider-Man now because you told me that there's no Spidey sense. Like,
it is still worth seeing. It is a strange thing. They go through the entire movie. There is never a Spidey sense moment.
And
but
I'm sorry.
It is still worth seeing.
I'm a little upset about that because, you know, that's a big part of Spidey.
It is. It is a big part of Spidey.
You know, I watched the cartoons. I remember he got Spidey sense and the eyes would glow. And
I think that may have been one of the first things of the Spider-Man ethos to make it into the popular vernacular.
Right.
People who barely knew who Spider-Man was would understand if you said, oh, wait, my Spidey sense is tingling.
Right. Yes. And for those of you who live under a rock and don't know what that is, it's kind of akin to Gator. It's the same little tingle. What? It is.
That's great. That is the most alternate read to Spider-Man that I have ever experienced.
Just for you, Clinton. Just for you.
Somebody, some PhD candidate
is writing this
PhD
dissertation right now.
In popular culture is changing their thesis right now. said our first guest.
And you're welcome. Yes, our first guest. Oh, I'm really excited. Adam Disbro, a painter expressionist.
Yes.
Okay, so explain that.
Explain expressionism?
Well, not expressionism, because no, we don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, no, I think but... so, because you're an expressionist painter, and I think it'd be good for our listeners who don't understand what that means.
Okay.
To get an eye into that, what is that? You're an expressionist painter, so you're a painter, but specifically, you're an expressionist painter.
Ah, yes, I am.
What does that mean?
Okay, thank you. Well, first off, my name is Adam Disbro, and I am an American expressionist painter. I've got work all over the country in galleries in San Diego. All around Virginia, and I have works hanging in collectors' homes all over the place. Expressionist painting would be the use of color, form, light, and the absence of mind, I would say, to express yourself on canvas. And it would be projecting whatever a feeling might be, whatever the feelings you might be having about any issue, any subject matter, any topic, any statement, in an abstract way, to convey that feeling to someone else.
So for those of you who, you know, may have drunk a little too much last night and weren't following all of that, so if you were painting, let's say, a bowl of fruit.
Oh, perfect.
It would not be a bowl of fruit. Like, we wouldn't look at it and see a bowl.
Oh, no. Absolutely not, actually. If I was to paint a bowl of fruit, I probably would paint a bowl of fruit. But it would not be in any form realistic. It would probably... I would probably... You know, right now I'm actually seeing a painting of bowl of fruit that I would do in my
right.
mind. So I would do many layers, because that's what I do. I use many layers of specific conceptuality, symbols,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking a lot of layers, like, you know, 15 to 20.
Wow.
And what that does is that compiles specific objective symbols over and over again in kind of like a formulated chaos.
Right.
So that when people look at it, it kind of opens the mind that, like, the mind is infinity. Everybody carries with them connotations and experiences that are different.
Right.
So the mind is an equivalent to Pandora's box. So when someone looks at my paintings, they see things that I didn't necessarily put there that they carry with them.
Right.
And that's the power of many, many layers of objective symbols. That when I look at it, I see tons and tons of very specific things. But that formulates kind of like the ink blotter test. Everybody sees something different. Everybody sees themselves. That opens the conversation.
Yeah.
And the hope would be that people would maybe for a moment see something that they didn't see before. Now, going back to that bowl of fruit, because I kind of wandered.
Yeah.
What I would do is I would do layers and layers of abstract work, colors, forms, symbols of my own creation. And then on top of it, I probably would do a black linear line of a bowl of fruit. So people would very clearly see
okay.
a bowl of fruit. But underneath it, they would see many layers of other things. Things that might connotatively represent fruit or bowls of fruit or what kind of...
Or maybe even the emotions around fruit?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, every piece of mine is a singular objective statement generally.
Yeah.
Like, I have an upcoming show. It's the Portrait of Beauty show. The Portrait of Beauty series is a very specific abstract representation of what I perceive cultural representation and cultural identity with what beauty is and how we identify with beauty and how we accept beauty as. And I mean, in a weird way, I guess the root of what I'm trying to do with that is showing the humanity in superficiality.
Oh.
So, say that again. The humanity in superficiality.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the Portrait of Beauty series would... Vimos at its root clearly be an attempt at showing the humanity in superficiality, because in culture we end up identifying with whatever culture we live in's
right.
image of beauty.
Yeah.
And it's not always an original thing. but it's not wrong either.
Right.
And that's the biggest point, is that humanity in superficiality, it's not wrong. We all want identity. We all want acceptance. We all want to be loved. We all have the same desires pretty much at our roots as human beings. And I guess at the root, you know, I'm not saying this is wrong at all. I'm saying it's beautiful. But it's just another point. It's another point to make. It's another thing out there. So going back to our bowl of fruit again, what would be the artistic statement I could make with a bowl of fruit? Well, bowls of fruits have been painted for centuries.
They have.
And what is the point of painting a bowl of fruit? What is the point of painting a still life? Why did we start painting realistic bowls of fruit and then move to impressionistic bowls of fruit? We were trying to convey a feeling. We were trying to promote maybe at one point it was a lifestyle, a level of lifestyle, like a level of opulence, because fresh fruit wasn't always affordable for everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if you had a painting of a bowl of fruit on your wall, you're like, okay, I'm wealthy enough to not only have bowls of fruit in my home,
but look,
eat fresh fruit, but look, I even have it on my wall, and you can't eat those.
Right.
don't eat those. Those won't taste good.
Those might not be good for your digestion.
I love the layers of self-proclaiming opulence there. Not only am I rich enough to have fruit, but I'm rich enough to afford to have a painting, and I'm rich enough to afford having a painting of the fruit that I'm rich enough to have.
That is exactly the point. So if I was,
and then I'm going to paint Trump on top of the whole
thing.
He would be in the back layer.
Right.
So there you go. So if I'm going to paint an expressionistic painting of a bowl of fruit, I would put in there that social commentary of opulence,
right,
entitlement, wealth, and what those symbols imply. Because that's what expressionism is. And that's why I feel abstract art is so powerful. Well, that's why I think abstract art is, today, it does more than realism can.
Right.
Because realism, I think today, I mean, I love realism. I love photorealism. There's some oil paintings out there, some artists out there that are doing just incredibly phenomenal work, doing basically painting paintings that look like photographs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is fantastic and incredible and mind-blowing to me, and I think it's awesome. But it's not necessarily my go-to for artistic representation, because personally, I'm a huge fan of photography, and I have seen people use photography to capture existence, human life, human emotion, in a way that I think actually does it better than
a painting.
Photorealism painting.
Yeah.
So there is, a photograph can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's wonderful and beautiful. And I actually think that is going to be in the future. I think that you're going to see one-off photographs framed like a painting that are selling for millions.
Oh, yeah.
We actually have at this point.
Yeah.
But so where does that leave painting? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There has to be something for the future of this art form. And it's interesting because I don't necessarily feel like, you know, we have in our past the super famous painters and the super famous poets, the household names. And I don't know necessarily that we have that today.
No.
Right.
You know,
right.
What's the last household name expressionist painter you can think of?
Nothing in this century, that's for sure. And I'm not well versed enough to say that's
good.
An expressionist.
Oh, you're totally good.
Rick Rothfuss? I don't have his name right. He painted those huge, huge paintings that a lot of layers, but a lot of layers of really dark colors, and so it, when you first looked at it, it looks very simple, but then you start to look at it and you see all of the layers of very similar dark colors
Beautiful, beautiful paintings. Yeah. But I'm going to hit you with a name that you probably both know.
Okay.
Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
There you go. He's the king of expressionism, neo-expressionism at that. That is a household name of a super famous expressionist painter. Neo-expressionism, really. And, you know, I combine abstract impressionism, abstract expressionism, and neo-expressionism in my work.
Okay.
So there you go. He's not living. Rest in peace.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Aside from that, then you have the super ultra famous household name poets. You know?
Right.
Like, this is another side of it. There are these really long term and super, super poignant art forms that have influenced and affected our culture over centuries that are kind of missing in today's high technology world.
Yes.
And if we take that statement and apply it to what photography is doing to realistic painting, then what can we do with modern contemporary art?
Right.
And that's why I use abstract work. That's why I'm working to develop. Well, it's really not even a... Honestly, it wasn't a mental decision purpose thing that I'd made at one point. I wasn't intellectually, okay, I'm going to sit down and do this and this is what it's going to be.
This is my mission.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't... It was therapy for me in the beginning. You know what I mean? And I've been a painter and an artist for a very long time. My whole life. But up until 2014, I painted paintings I thought other people wanted to see.
Oh.
And it was early 2014 that I decided that something happened in my brain, something happened in my life, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to start painting the paintings I want to see in the world.
Yeah.
And that was the huge shift, and it was very quickly that things started to happen.
All right, we're going to come back to that as we do a quick break.
Yes, drop. Let's pay some bills.
18 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, your show about local art. We're sitting here with Adam Disbro talking about painting, specifically talk about expressionism in preparation for his upcoming show. So I want to talk about your upcoming show. Mm-hmm. In fact,
yes.
why don't we just jump into it? So you've got a show opening up at the Music Resource Center.
Absolutely, yep.
Talk about Portrait of Beauty.
Okay, I will. And again, thank you for having me.
Of course.
Truly appreciate being here. And I'll just take this moment to say thank you to the Music Resource Center in Charlottesville for hosting my work this coming Friday for the first Friday's Art Walk in Charlottesville. Huge appreciation.
That's an uncommon venue for art, isn't it? How did tell me? Because we talked a little bit about before the show.
It's new, but it's beginning to do this more and more. And I think we'll start seeing it happen every month. And
cool.
I think it's just going to be an ongoing thing. So maybe in the future, as they get their foothold on, it will not be such an uncommon venue for art and First Friday's shows. This Friday, First Friday's Art Walk is taking place on the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville, and I'll be participating there in their upstairs. I call it the Cathedral Gallery, but it's really just the upstairs of this really great old church that the Music Resource Center inhabits.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have an art show up there, and you're going to be able to see the new series, which is the Portrait of Beauty series, and you'll also be able to see a bunch of my other work, which is I work in series a bunch. I have an untitled series, self-portrait series, preposition series, conversational series, which is where kind of conversations with past great artists or less known, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, I work in series, and you'll be able to see a good number of my works. The range I think will be dating 2014 to the present.
Okay.
And it's going to be a great time. The show is happening Friday, August 4th, 5 to 7 p.m. And everyone is invited to attend.
Yeah.
So, and you said the Portrait of Beauty is inspired by your thoughts on how we look at beauty.
The role of beauty in culture.
The role of beauty in culture.
Yeah. So my work is a commentary on history and culture of man. As a general scope of all of my paintings. That's what I do. Each painting is a statement. So some key concepts to the Portrait of Beauty series would be sexuality, mm-hmm. hypersexuality, huge in our culture today.
Yeah.
And pretty much, people, I would say maybe more conservative viewers kind of come to me and they ask me about these symbols that I use on my paintings. And I say, well, you need a hypersexual symbol to point a finger at hypersexuality and culture.
Yep.
And, it's really more about creating awareness than anything else.
Yeah.
So beyond that, you're also going to see the key concepts of minimalism in the Portrait of Beauty series.
See that?
Uh-huh.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Because, Leslie, you've got some in front of you, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. I've got them in front of me. And they're gorgeous.
Oh, thank you so much.
They're absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you can see all my work at my website, adamdisbro.com. And it's just my name. That
is so cool.
Thank you. That's Portrait of Beauty 2, Blue Dancer. And that was inspired by a 40-foot-tall statue that first debuted at Burning Man and then was moved to a park in San Francisco And now I believe it's in a park in Las Vegas. But it's a 40-foot statue of a dancing woman.
Oh,
and
wow.
When I saw this image, I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. And it's very realistic. And it's pretty hypersexual statue. If you can imagine a 40-foot tall woman that is, you know, pretty much...
Naked?
Naked and proportionally... you know, what we would consider beautiful today. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's also fully expressionistic freedom. You know, she's totally free and dancing. And it's and if you can imagine this being 40 foot tall and what this would do, how this would make you feel. So when I saw that, I was like, man, I have to do this. And I kind of, I feel like I want to flip it a little bit because this is a very minimalistic representation of that.
Right.
Also, this would be a nod to Henri Matisse. And his blue,
I see that.
And his blue,
I see
woman
that. Yeah,
series.
Yeah.
And this is a really, really. It'll be hard to tell from this, but this is a highly textured painting. When you get up and see this, you're going to see three dimensions all over this stuff.
Really?
Yeah. So what I like to do is I like to like really just sometimes I'll use canvases as palettes for paint. So I'll use a canvas. To put paint on to paint another painting.
Yeah.
And this piles and piles, just chunks of like different colors on a canvas for me. And then after that painting is done and I'm moving on, I'll take that canvas palette and I'll whitewash it with a thin white paint.
Yeah.
And then I'll paint a painting over it. And this just piles up texture.
Yeah.
And it also is really fun because if you backlight this thing, suddenly you just get colors popping through the white.
Yeah.
And then you get like a whole nother art piece behind it if you just put a light. So this is, you know.
I don't think I've ever seen people backlight their paintings before.
It's not something you would really see in a gallery. It's not something, but it's kind of like, you know, there's all these different things you can put into paintings and we call those the secrets. These are secrets to pieces that I have. You know, if you put a light behind it, you might never know what you might actually see come out.
Okay, so I want to talk about the self-portrait.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, that's a pretty heavy... That's a great one. That's my most recent self-portrait. That is a self-portrait in January 2017, and I feel like a very important event occurred this past January 2017, and that would reflect how I'm feeling about the state of things at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of crosses in this.
Oh yeah. So
there are a lot of and I love what you did with the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the blue rectangle underneath eye would be representative of tears.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Oh. And the crosses, I generally put four crosses or nine, but most of the time four. And those four are representative of the four Greek muses of language and dialect.
Oh.
So objective conceptual symbols.
And of course, your mouth is covered up.
Well,
partially.
Actually, teeth are showing. So the gold, that's 24 karat gold leaf tooth, and that would be a symbol for opulence and wealth in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would kind of be, you know, America on the world stage has a statement of we are a very rich country, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe not. And there's an argument there. Some people say that we are rich, but also highly in debt.
If not, we're a rich country, we certainly worship rich.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could also go into the conversation of what actually is true wealth, you know. I mean, we have freedom, and maybe that's wealth.
Right.
But point is that here I'm really talking more, when I use a 24-karat gold leaf, I'm really talking about monetary wealth.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
Right.
So this is a portrait of a very sad person, or a disillusioned person, maybe. The squares with the lines through them, singular, are fractals. So that's a building block of creation. You could think of that maybe as the atom.
Yeah.
When you have multiple squares with a line through it, that's how perspective ties creation together. And, you know, atoms bound together to create the created world. So what you have here is, and I hopefully, you know, maybe it comes through, maybe it doesn't, but this is a person who is pretty amazed and maybe has mixed emotions, definitely on the negative side of what has transpired.
Yeah.
Coupled with, you know, a gold tooth. So, you know, he's wealthy and rich, but he's also maybe disillusioned and uncertain about things.
Mm.
And, you know, in January 2017, something very big happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am always interested in especially painters' self-portraits, because they're never straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
It's never and even people who paint realistically, when they do a self-portrait, there's always something in it. You know, it's always like, oh, wait. Yeah, okay, yeah. I know you a little bit. I know exactly what that means.
That's real. That's real right there. And I agree.
This is very cool. So so how many pieces are you going to have at the Music Center?
Oh, that's a really good question. I actually am not 100% certain on the exact number yet. It'll be at least 10.
Oh, great.
Maybe more. Probably more. I'm kind of gathering work from around right now and getting like all my. So it'll be a bunch.
And do you know how long they'll hang there for?
That is a great question. And I'll probably leave them up for 2 weeks. So following the show on August 4th, if you're interested, come on by the Music Resource Center during normal business hours, hopefully.
Yes. Yes.
And you can go upstairs and check them out.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I absolutely adore your work, and I'm definitely
thank you so much. I
going to
that.
Go by and see it.
I hope to see you there if you can make it to the show.
Yes. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Adam.
Oh, thank you, Leslie.
It was great to meet you.
Thank you for coming on Homegrown.
Thank you.
We'll have you back.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Well, I appreciate you.
So. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. 28 minutes past the hour.
Oh, my God. 28 minutes?
28. All 28 of those minutes. I think that we should talk about What's going on?
Yes, we should talk about what's going on. So currently running through August 27th, the Mysteries That Remain, the first museum survey of the work of acclaimed Australian Indigenous artist Mick Namarari. Yeah, I'm not going to get that. At the Kluge Room.
Namarari Jari.
Okay. Yeah. See, you had practice. That's not fair. You can see it at the Kluge Room Aboriginal Art Collection. Currently running through November 26th, the American Shakespeare Center's summer fall season, featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry VI Part 3 by Shakespeare, and the modern musical Peter and the Starcatcher, all at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. Through August 2nd, Calendar Girls at Oak Grove Theater in Verona. Yes, I'm gonna try to see that because my friend Jen is in it. Okay. Through August 4th, Stephen Sondheim's Early Gym Company plays at UVA's Culbreth Theater as part of their Heritage Summer Theater Festival. And through August 5th, Oklahoma by the Charlottesville Opera and the Charlottesville Ballet at Paramount Theater. Currently running through August 13th, The Addams Family, a new musical at Four County Players, which I saw on Friday. And oh my God, if you ever watched the TV show, if you saw any of the movies, you will love this. It's a real trip down memory lane. August 1st, Charlottesville Writer House Masterclass Series with Jane Friedman. This week, Building an Author Platform at Indoor Biotechnologies. August 4th and August 5th, UVA's Heritage Theater Festival presents a special two-night showing of former Big Apple Circus clown Barry Lubin in his clown persona, Grandma Lubin. Was the first clown to play on all seven continents at UVA's Ruth Kaplan Theater. Also August 4th, join Tim Cunningham, UVA School of Nursing and Clowns Without Borders for an interactive discussion of the role of humanitarian clowns and their work in and outside of medical environments at the Culbreth Theater. Live Arts Musical Theater Production Camp. Performers 8 to 14 present Disney's Peter Pan Jr. at Live Arts. The Teen Shorts for short teen-directed plays by local playwrights Robert Ray, Kate Monahan, Sean McCord, and Liam Hubbard play at Gorilla Theater. August 5th, UVA's Heritage Theater Festival presents 9 a.m. Circus in America. Levon Ho, drama professor, an internationally known circus historian and author, will present a whirlwind spin through the history of circus in America. What is with the circus stuff? 10:15, Clown Camp, a hands-on, active thing. Workshop with Clowns Without Borders, performers for kids from 5 to 105. 11:30, Behind the Nose, an interactive discussion on the role of hospital clowns presented in collaboration with Clowns Without Borders and Tim Cunningham, UVA School of Nursing, all at the Culbreth Theater. Do they supply the noses, or do we have to bring our own? I'm just...
Stop busting on the circus.
No, it's a question. I just have a question. I mean, if I have to bring a nose, then I need to know that. August 5th, Jefferson School Trailblazer Tour Guides lead a premiere tour of the first public exhibition by local photographer Yolanda Coles Jones, Private Spaces at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Oh, and where did we hear about that? Oh, I think it was on the show. Yeah, we talked to her, like last week. August 5th, instructor Christy Smeltzer leads So You Think You Want a Novel, a seminar for budding and in-process first-time novelists at the Charlottesville Writer House. August 8th, Charlottesville Writer House Masterclass Series with Jane Friedman. This week, the author website at Indoor Biotech. Is that a repeat? Did you type two things in two different places on the same piece of paper? Is that what you did?
If so, did you have to say it?
Well...
If so, did you have to say it?
Apparently I did.
Good. Apparently you did.
Yeah, apparently I did.
You know what Clinton. I've got to say? I've got to talk about, hey,
what's
the music coming up
music?
This week. Leslie complains and complains and complains and complains and complains all throughout the week. On noon, Ken Nelson and the Jazz Rascals set you up with Cajun Jazz and Jazz Afternoon at Fellini's. This afternoon, Pat Anderson at 2 p.m. at Wild Wolf Brewery. Also, Kiz Carter and Juke Jackson playing you the blues at 3:30 p.m. at Glasshouse Winery. Also tonight, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Tomorrow, ATM Unit featuring Randy Johnston at Rapture. August 1st, Charlottesville Municipal Band continues their 95th summer concert series at the Paramount Theater. Travis Elliott is at Fellini's. August 2nd, it's Uncle Billy at Three Notch Brewing Company.
Uncle Billy?
Uncle Billy at Three Notch Brewing Company.
I know an Uncle Billy. I wonder if it's the same guy.
It could be.
You know.
August 3rd, Will Overman at Valley Roads Vineyards. The Bob Bonetta Quartet featuring Dick Orange at Tavern on the James. Neil Goodlow and Lon Tate play acoustic tunes as the 503 Fossils at Dirty Nelly's. And the band formerly known as Season 3 is now Solar Hearts. And they're playing at Fellini's on August 3rd. On August 4th, it's Jimmy O at Heritage on Main, Bob Bonetta, and then the Chickenhead Blues Band at Fellini's. Our man Matty Metcalf, Dave Brzezinski, and Estrella Knott perform as Lua at Glasshouse Winery. And also on the 4th, Pickin' and Grinnin', the open music jam at James River Brewery, Richmond's Future Prospect with Velvet People Collective at the Ante Room, and Mojo Pie at Dirty Nelly's on August 5th. Oh, the Charlottesville, Charlottesville Day at the Ix Art Park with live entertainment and games. Then, you can hit the Charlottesville After Party with Leo Bash and DJs Flatline Lay, Be Easy, Almighty, W, and So Fly at the Ante Room. Also on the 5th, Ann Lahr, and then Luca Dora at the Tin House Whistle, or Tin Whistle Irish Pub, Ian Gilliam and the Fire Kings at the Batesville Market, An Evening with Alligator at Jefferson Theater, Classic Folk Rock reimagined with electric instruments by the Blenders at Heritage on Main, and Sammy Horn, and then John Durth at Fellini's. Every Monday is the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School, then at Seafoot at Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, the open mic night at the Proray Not a Farm Brewery. The Jazz Collective number 9 at Fellini's number 9. And Josh Mayo hosts the open mic night at Holly's Deli Pub. Every Wednesday also, Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet. And if you're not blown out from the multiple things you can do on Wednesday.
And Thursday.
On Thursday.
Every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
There you go.
At Miller's. John Durth, the John Durth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Durth.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I saw John last week.
Did you?
Yeah, we were in Seville Coffee at the same time. He even hugged me.
Really?
Yes. And I was like, John, when are you coming on the show? He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Email me. And I'm like, sweetie, like, I've emailed you like four times.
Oh, yeah. You guys have a show.
Four times, John. Four times. Answer one of them, precious. Okay? I love ya.
Let's hit a drop.
We're representing Live Arts, and you're listening to... This is Bree Luck.
And Jaden Kowal.
We're representing Live Arts, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
36 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call, your host, Rick Moore. It's an already recorded version of the wake-up call, so you can't call in. Well, you can call in, but there'll be nobody here to take that call.
Dan will be here.
Rick's guest
today. I don't know if he's going to pick the phone up, though.
Rick's guest. He's not going to pick up that phone. The guest today is John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute, talking about what else? Civil liberties and human rights.
Wow.
But before that...
That's a needed conversation for sure.
It's such a needed conversation right
now. Before
And you know what I hope?
What do you hope?
I really hope that the conversation
Clinton,
falls...
Clinton, what are your hopes? What are your dreams? Your aspirations?
My hopes and my dreams. along with my thoughts and prayers... are that we have yet another conversation that puts stern, stern limits on those people who would speak against the people speaking hate speech, because they're the people who really need to be shut down. But they really, really need to be controlled. Those people who are fighting against hate.
Really?
Because we're so concerned about those.
Okay. Remind
you obviously
me,
didn't see the most recent editorial at the Daily Progress.
No, I don't
It was really like, okay, white supremacists, we got that. But let's talk about the counter-protesters. I'm like, really?
Whatever. Yeah, that's probably the reason I didn't read it. But you know what?
Guest.
We've got an amazing guest sitting across from us right now.
Woo-hoo!
Who, you know, I hate just a little bit because he just came back from Hawaii. Oh, my God. for our Facebook audience, Greg Brown, ladies and gentlemen, talking about his new album, Just Tell Me Why.
Good morning. Aloha.
Yes, I was seriously jealous of all the pictures you were posting about your time in Hawaii.
That was a very small portion. It was a fantastic dream trip. If I didn't have those pictures, I would have thought it was a dream. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Can I tell you, I have an approach avoidance thing with Hawaii, just really quickly, approach avoidance things, because it looks like a magical paradise from all the photos.
Yeah.
And so... that's the approach. But then I think it's just like these teeny islands out in the middle of a whole heck of a lot of water. It's
yeah. Just... Can you swim?
Not that well.
Come on. You can do the doggy paddle for 2,300 miles to the next piece of land. Sure. God. Jeez,
no
Clinton.
I was where the volcanoes were dormant. So on Maui. So it wasn't so bad. But it was amazing. I mean, everybody wears your swim trunks 24/7.
And of course.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you get hot, you jump in the water. It was amazing. So everywhere I looked was like a postcard. You know, I told the guy who was heading the festival, I was like, I just can't play under these conditions.
It's, right?
This is terrible.
This is horrible. You
is
have
such
to
a distraction.
Fix this. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. More room service. Yeah.
Did you just tear up the rider? there's no point to this.
What am I supposed to do with this?
Okay. So how long were you there? You were there
about 2 weeks.
You were there for 2 weeks, and you were playing in an acoustic guitar festival.
Yeah, it was actually like a classical guitar festival. It was headed up by a guy, Ben Verdery, who teaches out at Yale,
mm-hmm.
and then his guest was Martha Masters, who's the head of the Guitar Foundation of America. And then like 14 guitar players from across the country, and it was insane. It was amazing because we did a bunch of ensemble stuff and solo pieces. And
so all these guys and gals arrived, mm-hmm. and you just sat down and said, okay, what are we going to play? And somebody shouted out a song and you just did it. Like, how did that work?
I don't think that works at a classical festival.
right. Not exactly. There were some ensemble pieces. They sent music out a couple weeks before.
Okay.
One of them, Ben's piece, if you know Ben, you'll understand this. It morphed as the pro, you know, like, all right, we can do this. We can do this. All right, go over here. And there, you play Cajon. All right. I mean, it was just,
right.
But it was amazing. It was just so vibrant. And, but a lot of people had prepared pieces, but then the ensemble stuff was kind of selected. So,
okay.
So it was cool. I got to play my own stuff, which was great.
Awesome.
So did you play some of the work that's on this current album?
I did. Yeah, which was cool because it was definitely a dichotomy because you had people playing a lot of like Bach and traditional classical music.
Right.
Some very atonal 20th century and whatever it is I do. It was like a fusion of blues, jazz, and classical, you know, with finger style stuff. I mean, all coming out at once. So it was cool. It was a fun event.
Can we jump right in and hear one of those pieces from the album?
Yes, sure. Let's hear it. Which one? I know this is horrible to ask you to choose a favorite between all of your babies.
Let's start with the first.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Blues on the Bayou.
Blues on the Bayou from Greg Brown's new album, Just Tell Me Why, here on Homegrown 94.7 WPVC.
is Corey Bix from Victory Hall Opera. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local arts on 94.7 WPBC.
Hey, Alex, I need your help. Marsha and I are celebrating. I know you go to Market Street Wine Shop and was wondering if you had any recommendations.
You bet, Mike. You should both go to another tastings.
Sounds good. We work downtown but live on Rio. Don't they have two locations?
Yes, they do. 311 East Market Street, downtown or on 29 North in Rivanna Place. Directions and tasting schedules are at marketstreetwine.com. I was just in last week. Your staff really know their stuff.
Thanks, Alex. I'll tell Marsha. What's their phone number?
It's 434-979-WINE downtown and 964-WINE uptown. That's Market Street Wine Shop, supporting this station.
All right.
Oh, my God. That's some good stuff, Greg.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Blues on the Bayou from Just Tell Me Why.
Thank you.
So so we're going to do a giveaway. We are going to do a CD giveaway.
Awesome.
All right. So all you lovely people on Facebook, this is what you'll be getting. So what we're going to do, we're going to do a little trivia.
Ooh.
We're going to do a little trivia giveaway. That's what we're going to do. So... So if you're listening to the show, go to our Facebook page, all right, which you should already have liked by now. Oh, God. and the trivia question is, where has Greg been for in the last 2 weeks? If you answer that question correctly, the first person to answer it correctly with a message to the Homegrown Facebook page in the next 5 minutes.
Or 10.
Don't say or 10. I said 5 minutes. You get this beautiful baby right here. All for yourself. Wow. All right.
That's the trivia question. Where's Greg been?
Where's Greg been?
Let's keep it G-rated.
It's kind of... See, I wasn't even going there. I'm normally the person that goes there. But
okay. Cool.
So you were saying earlier that you what you play is like a mixture of all different kinds of stuff. Right. So why a blues album then? Why set yourself down and say, no, I'm doing this?
I think I don't know, the blues has always been kind of the heart of what I've always done.
Okay.
It's kind of how I started playing guitar. I got into blues. Happy birthday to Buddy Guy, by the way.
Yeah. I'm into that.
Yeah.
And then that just kind of led and progressed to kind of blues rock, heavier blues rock, you know, than metal, you know, that were influenced by the blues.
Right.
You know, Black Sabbath, things like that. And then as I've kind of gone as a musician, I've, you know, recently been doing a lot of the Spanish stuff, mm-hmm. et cetera, but always loved it. And last couple of years I got involved in the Central Blues Society, which is really cool. A lot of great guys and gals there, supportive. And so, they do a couple jams a month, and a lot of times they have a back band, and they say, hey, come on, sit in and jam. And so it's just been very fun and supportive. And I don't know, I, for me, creating, writing music has been my outlet. So I was like, I could do this. And it was just fun that I wasn't, you know, I've always tried to think out of the box. And
yeah.
So I was just like, I'm going to do this. And then there's enough songs to kind of warrant doing this project. And it was fun. You know, when you're playing a lot of solo guitar, you always feel like you're in timeout because you're always like, I got to go practice.
Right.
You know, so this was like, hey, let's play with a sax player. Let's do this with the drummer. Let's do this with the bass player. And so it was kind of a nice, fun social thing. And it just kind of grew from there. So
are all of these instrumentals?
All of those are instrumentals, yes.
Okay, cool. Because I know you do stuff where you sing, too.
I do. That's the next. That's upcoming.
Yeah, okay.
Wait, all of these are instrumentals?
All these are instrumentals.
Can we play them on the show?
Sure.
Can we use them for music on the show?
Totally.
That's awesome.
We so need that.
Yes.
No. It's funny. My last disc, which was a Spanish disc, was actually used for the sister Latin station.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, nice.
They're like, oh, we're going to use your music for the weather. I'm like, okay. While we read the news. All right. You know, so.
Yeah. Awesome.
No, go for it.
Yes. Cool. So, Clayton, we have new music.
Yay.
I'm very excited.
I don't know what happens when you play it backwards. I don't know. But forwards, there's no vocals.
We hypnotize everyone.
If you've been at some place where I can't say, because that's the trivia thing, when you play things forwards, I wonder if backwards you end up in Detroit for the week.
It could be.
You would be fine in Detroit. You would be fine. So we've played a track from the album, but there's a guitar sitting over there.
Yeah, there is. You want to play us a song?
Yes, please play for us.
Well, I thought you were going to play us a song.
No, I cannot do guitar. No, Clinton could though.
Nice.
He's been taking classes and everything.
Cool. I'll play a piece called Americana. It was one of the pieces I did in my set while I was in Hawaii.
Okay.
Kind of a nice. I'm going to move my mic in just a second. Are you going to use that mic there? Thank you very much.
That's
thank
awesome.
You.
What did you just do?
Right?
Talk of, like the mix of the I could so see the mix of different styles because you had like there was some Spanish influence there. You were bending notes from the blues. It could just holy smokes.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's all in there. It all comes out.
That was great. Okay, so why don't you don't use a pick?
Not when I do this. It depends, you know, if I'm doing, you know, rock or metal stuff, but no, I do mostly nails. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's, you can get a lot more done.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yes, that's
wow, do
what
we
Leslie's
have an answer to winner on
say.
That, trivia question yet?
We do not have an answer yet to those.
Oh, answers. Okay. Oh. All right. Whew. Oh, my God.
All right.
All right.
I'm kind of nervous on the answers.
Greg, thank you so much for coming back on the show and sharing your wonderful gift with us. Cool. And you are always welcome to come by. Awesome. When your next project's ready, let us know.
Cool. Thank you. All right. It's coming.
All right. Greg Brown, Just Tell Me Why. Buy it.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thanks, Greg.
You bet.
Thanks, Greg.
You bet.
Oh, 54 minutes past the hour.
How about that?
How about that?
I know.
It's time for the reason and the rhyme. That's Leslie's weekly rant.
Oh, I thank you, Clinton. So this week, Broadway producers of The Great Comet had a little misstep in their logic, which may cost them an entire Broadway show. For those of you who haven't been following along, Okoret Onodoha has been playing the lead role for several weeks now. He took the role from another actor. And for those of you who don't know, this is how Broadway works. A musical will open with a certain set of actors playing the principal roles, and they'll stay 6, 8, 12 weeks, and then another set of actors will take over. This allows the show to run longer on Broadway and for producers and backers to get their money back. Mandy Patinkin was supposed to take over the lead role. They'd asked him to take the role because sales of the show had decreased and they wanted a big name in the title role to give the show a longer run. What producers neglected to tell Mr. Patinkin was that this was an underhanded deal. They asked Onodoha to cut his contract short so that Patinkin, who had a more recognizable name, could take over and possibly save the show. Now, does this happen on Broadway all the time? Of course it does. But that doesn't make it right. If you've contracted me to play a role for 8 weeks, then I want to play the role for 8 weeks. Now, if I'm an actor taking over a role in a Broadway show, I would hope that I am not asked to take over a role to the detriment of a fellow actor. I mean, I get the show must go on. I get that producers and backers want to get their money back, but there has to be room for us to be human beings in all of this. And I'd like to give my own little shout out to Mandy Patinkin right now. This is a man of amazing talent, a beautiful voice. This is a man who has delighted audiences from playing Inigo in Princess Bride to his roles in Chicago Hope to his current role in his HBO show Homeland. I first fell in love with Mandy in The Princess Bride. And after that, I discovered his beautiful singing voice. I've loved him for a very long time, and now I love him even more. Granted, Mandy's making money. I mean, he doesn't necessarily need to do another Broadway show. I mean, he's got Tonys and Emmys to fill a couple of shelves at home. But he wanted to play this part. And I'm so proud of him for turning it down because it meant that he would have done something so wrong to a fellow actor. And for those of you who aren't artists, who aren't actors, who don't understand what I'm talking about, it's really hard to be a working actor. People go to New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta every single day to work their butts off and get a shot at starring in a Broadway musical. It's a one in a million shot. It doesn't happen to everyone. It takes a lot of time and a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice. And when you get there, it must be devastating to have done a wonderful job in the role and still be asked to step aside for someone with a more recognizable name. Now, some of the backlash has said that the only reason that this is a problem is because the actor being asked to step aside happens to be black. Well, I have a couple of things to say on that, too. First of all, no one wants to call him by his actual name. They've given him a nickname, Oak. Yeah, his name's Okoret. Okay, they've given him this name because obviously they can't be bothered to pronounce his full name. And let's face it, Mandy is easier to pronounce. The producers claim that this decision was purely financial, just to keep the show running as long as possible. I'm going to call BS on that one, too. In this day and age, with the current idiot we have in the White House, are you really going to tell me that they didn't realize what the optics of replacing a black actor with a white actor before the black actor's contract was actually up were going to look like? There's absolutely no way any logical thinking person could believe that there could be no backlash for this decision. I mean, even the phrasing they used is odd. Has graciously agreed to step aside. I'm sorry, no actor in a lead role in a Broadway musical would graciously decide to give it up. So, kudos to Mandy Patinkin for standing up for a fellow artist. It's something we should all do more often. And Okorette, I hope you get an even bigger gig, which will probably mean that The Great Comet is about to close its run on Broadway. And for that, I'm going to say to Dave Malloy, the composer, karma works. And that's the weekly rant.
59 minutes past the hour. That's it. This has been Homegrown, your show about local art. We'd like to thank our guest, Adam Disbro, and Greg Brown. Coming up next, it's the Sunday morning wake-up call with Rick Moore. It's already recorded, so if you call in, Rick won't answer. Their guest is John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. They'll be talking about civil liberties and human rights. Thank you very much. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.